Radio Krishna 101, antar jag. Radio Krishna 101, I suppose, or something else. Maybe I can stick it in somewhere, in some episode of 101. So anyway, devotees, Krishna devotees of my generation, you know, I'm talking sometimes about us who became Hare Krishnas back in the days with all what it meant, and which, you know, some people saw as joining a cult and becoming strange, which it was to a certain extent, but then, you know, at least we early ones, some of us at least, discovered that, hey, there's something great behind all this. What a knowledge, what a culture, what, wow, what a gift we have been given here. So we spent our lives continuing exploring and living this knowledge that Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada translated and gave us in the form of these books, like this Bhagavatam. But yes, along that way, through the years, we've also questioned things and adjusted our understanding, and of course that's how it should work, right? And one thing I wanted to talk about today is personalism versus impersonalism. That's one of the first things you learn when you come to this Vaishnava. You know, you read these teachings and learn about this tradition. It's personalism. God is a person, we are persons, and it's all about personal relationships between us all, to this or that extent, and in this and that form. But then you have the Advaitas there, which, at least in those days, were kind of more, you know, could say dominating or unknown in the West, and like dominating India too, I guess. You know, the idea of God just being oneness and energy, that is all that exists, actually. After all, Brahman and this experience I have of being a person, me, and there is you, it's an illusion, it's also Maya. Well, I mean, we can discuss that back and forth, but what I saw and can see, I claim, is how these two philosophies, they're more than just a theory in your mind, but they become, such as philosophies do, if they are not totally theoretical and remote from the world, they influence us how we think and act and are towards each other and ourselves, right? So I would say, and I know of Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Swami, he seemed very aware of that, and he warned his disciples, try to protect them from these impersonalist influences, like when he started traveling and living in India, which many did when they were very young and neophyte. And also he emphasizes, you know, that pretty much in his writings, speaking against the Mayavad philosophy, and such. Now, things can creep in anyway, and it must have been a real challenge for Prabhupada to handle that. Because that personalism is so essential in these teachings and what it's all about, like here in the Bhagavatam. One interesting thing, which, you know, we have been speaking about now and then through the years, well, I heard several say that, you know, with this usual ironical, humorous twist that we often handle things with, that, yes, we are personalist, but I've hardly ever seen any group or society, even compared to how I lived before I joined this ISKCON, where people are as impersonal toward each other than they are here. You know, you hang your clothes in the laundry, we all share the same laundry, 100 people. And then the drying rope there in the drying room was full. Somebody had neatly hung their clothes, maybe a whole family's clothes, on those lines. Well, you know, you're busy, lots to do, have to serve Krishna, gotta serve. So just tear them all down, throw them in a pile, well, hopefully not on the floor. That's where it could end up, when the next person came and thought this was just rubbish. You know, things could happen like that, and there you stand. And I know so many clothes disappeared, and then someone opened a clothes shop, but free clothes. They just collected all that which had disappeared because it was somewhere. And you could go there It was in the attic of New Radhakund, I remember. And get just anything. Fine clothes. So well, yeah. It tended to work out in the end anyway. But well, that was kind of fun story in a way, but also given an idea how it was back then. The good and the bad of it, so to speak. But a kind of far out adventure, as we used to say. So anyway, another thing is that thing with emotions. Again, bhakti is about love, right? Love is about emotions, isn't it? And these qualities of a Vaishnava, to be compassionate, tolerant, best friend of everyone, so on, that's also about emotions. You have feelings toward others. That's part of, that's called emotions. But emotions were sometimes looked down upon, and I bet they still are. Oh, don't get so emotional. Because it shouldn't follow your emotions, it should follow Guru Shastra's, Guru Sadhana Shastra, you know. The preachers on the Vyasa Sons told us, and I guess they'll tell, and of course I understand that this is relevant as well, but and you disagree with me if you want, but I say that another side to that slipped in, which was again the impersonalist side of it, that fear, you know, of relationships, fear of getting, you know, entangled in this world, and all these relationships here, they're just Maya. Although we're talking relationships between devotees, and you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and so on, Chaitanya Bhagavad, there's nothing but loving relationships between the devotees. Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda, you know. But we could become very cold toward each other, and I, for one, confess guilty as charged. So if you one of my victims, then and you want to talk about it, then you know where to find me. Give me a call or write me a note and we can meet and work it out. Hopefully without violence, because I was never a violent person. And I don't think, well, we became a bit heavy, but mental violence, I'm not really like that, so if I behaved like that, then sorry. But, you know, this is how I sit here these days and look back. And you see, I have to tell you a little bit my life story, whatever. can contribute to this. But you see, I was one of those heavy guys. There were worse ones, but I was one of them, let's confess. But then, one day, actually one moment, I was sitting behind my desk in Bornholm, Denmark, being a big shot, I realized afterwards, project manager for the exhibitions department of the Temple of Vedic Planetarium, traveling around all over the world, hanging out with the top guys and doing cool, interesting things. So anyway, I was sitting there looking out the window, and it was winter and dark out there. And it was as if Krishna or Lord Nrisimhadev, you know, I used to chant this, and still do sometimes, this beautiful mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jaste Jaseya Vira Vira Bhava, and so on, Vajanaka Vajadamstra Karma Sayandrandaya Randaya Tamo Grasa Grasa Om Swaha, which is a prayer to Prahlad from Bhagavatam here, to Lord Nrisimhadev, the form God takes to protect the devotees, and also the anger form of God when somebody behaves bad toward his devotees. So he took his claw, pushed it into my heart, and cracked that hard shell there. And it was painful, not physically, but I couldn't sleep for weeks and months. Because what happened was that, and I mean, when I say it now, I can even more see that it was Krishna. Everything I had, I mean, I'm not kidding. Some things may be forgotten, but the main things that I had done or said in an unkind, or, you know, even though I may have meant well, that hurt others, which I didn't even understand then, came to my mind, to my memory, but I felt how they must have felt at that time, when I said that or did that. And it was just like a movie, night and day. I could hardly work. I was crying and going there in and out in my consciousness, and it was very challenging. It was really like going through hell. And that went on for a year or something. And it was very much related to the woman. And I tried to get it together again with my former wife, which, for obvious reasons, she did not want. Well, not just my behavior, but differences between us. So then I found another lady, got married, got children. And, you know, when our kids were born, an old friend living then in Mayapur sent his greetings and well wishes, which I really appreciated, and said just one short thing, that when we got children, I learned from those children what love is. So will you. And he was right. And when I stand here now, walk here, almost 70 years old, my sons are stepping out of their teenage in just a few weeks. I realize this is what I learned, and for the past few years I got another phase of that education. You know, when you are grown up in a tradition where you think that being advanced, you know, or learned or renounced, an ascetic, or you know, all of that means shutting off your emotions. It means, you know, you don't feel much, especially about others. I mean, it's like a training to be a psychopath or something. It's a bit dangerous, this kind of impersonalism. And I'm not talking a philosophy, but more a kind of mentality, which then may be somewhere fed by a philosophy and social behavior based on that, which kind of contaminated is gone. I don't know. Possibly. But you know, then when you let those feelings, when you open up that, you know, that hard shell there breaks, then it can really become chaos in there, because feelings just come out and you can't control them, and you behave irrationally sometimes. And then of course the others who are trained in that, control your feelings, you know, and be rational and logical and the truth and all that, be austere and serious, they will of course look down on you, upon you even more. You might be considered a madman, and you have to take that too. But you know, when I, this became kind of personal, but maybe someone can identify with this story, that's why I'm telling personal stories sometimes. Back in, when I was 22, in the summer of 77, it's really when I started believing in God, you could say. It's when I had my conversation with God, which I had spoken about here elsewhere, maybe too much already. But I came to the point where, yes, now God here is in my life. And I got this message kind of from within, saying that you don't have to worry, I'm going to lead you now. I'm with you. Will always be, and always was, but you know, because I had taken that personal step, sitting in my kitchen just talking to God, as if God was standing there in the room with me, which I realized was the case, of course. But then there was one thing which I then understood or dared to trust is that now God is going to lead me. I just have to be ready to be led. Because, you know, often, and I saw it in my friends, yes, if any one of you listens to this, that's how it was. How even we, you know, 70s youth who were kind of proud that we were not just following the mainstream and living the way you were supposed to live because you were supposed to live because your parents said so, you know, and all of that. But then I realized that that happened to us also as we got a little older, you know, that this is the way you're going to live and think and talk and look, and because, well, because that's the way you do it, you know, that's the way everyone in our movement does it, otherwise you can go somewhere else, that kind of thing. So, and well, that happened in the Krishna movement, but then I also saw it among our 70s kids, that you have to be one of those alternative movement, leftist or whatever ist you were. It easily becomes like that in groups, among friends then too. So anyway, and there I was too, and I felt that same thing, you know, that fear of changing my life too much, or following my intuition, or, you know, that inner guide, you know, when it told me to go this way and not that way, step out into the unknown future path here, which I had been forced from within to do a few times already in my life. Such as just moving away from a little small town to Stockholm when I was 18, hardly knowing what was awaiting me. It was scary. So, and why I was afraid of it was that then I may just follow my mind, you know, and I could go crazy. I was thinking lots about those things because I was, you know, an artist, surrealist, reading Salvador Dali's books, and he said, you know, the only difference between me and a madman is that I'm not mad, and we went like, well, cool. But if he wouldn't have been big artist Salvador Dali, he would probably be sitting in a not hospital, mental hospital or something. So I was kind of afraid of just going out there being led by my heart or intuition or mind, you know. Women are probably better at it because they have more intuition. But then, since I had been promised by God that I would be led, I thought the best thing to do now, the logical thing to do, is to simply constantly, you know, pray and turn to God there within and ask for that guidance and listen, and but also be sensitive to what's happening around me, what people I meet and so on. God could lead me by any means, so I had to be open-minded. And then that all led me to step in the temple doors to the ashram of New Radha Kund in early March or late February 1978. Anyway.